What Does Law Mean, Mumu? The podcast series. Hello, I'm Pauline Marinan, and I am the writer of the little book, What Does Law Mean, Mumu? An Introduction to the Law for Young People. I'm going to take this opportunity of introducing you to the original purpose of the book and also leading you through some of the discussions that we have in Chapter 1. The book arose out of many thoughts about the need for a book about law for young people. I had initially intended it to be a textbook type formula with an index and lots of subjects covered. However, on reflection, it occurred to me that interesting aspects of the law and the way it interacts with our daily lives, the way it interacts with our democracy, our systems of government, our administrative systems, was of immediate interest and knowledge to young people, and that it might be more appropriate as a start to talk about some of these issues on an informal basis, in story format, with some young people. And so the journey begins with a group of young people who have seen off a friend to the airport who is going back to France to study law. This arises an interest in the subject of law. Questions follow. And Mumu, the main protagonist of the story and the narrator, suggests that perhaps a pen-friend relationship would be a good idea, through which the French person called Verity could write back and forth to the group, and that they could ask her questions about her progress through her studies of law in France. That in turn led to a realization that in order to benefit from that project, they first needed to know a little bit more about how the law operated in their part of the world, in a part of the world that is governed by common law principles as opposed to the code civil, the civil codes that they have in continental countries such as France. And so the idea of a pen friend was also discussed, and I'm sure to many this seems a rather odd concept, that you would have a friend to whom you write. Nevertheless, not so long ago, it was a very popular way of people keeping in touch and creating long-standing friendships with people who lived in other countries. Of course, you'll say, well, now people have all sorts of means electronically of keeping in touch. But with a bit of prejudice, I would ask, and would admit to, I would ask you to consider, how is it different if you write to somebody, take the time to sit down, put pen to paper, and write and develop a reciprocal arrangement back and forth, as opposed to putting messages up on what's commonly described as social media or texting, or I suppose emailing. But I would like you to think about that and consider the benefits of writing letters. And this story, I have described the journey that the group of learners go on with Mumu, as could say it's a voyage of discovery, but it's a walk and talk. It's told in an unusual story format through which discussions arise, some explanations are given, some things are understood, and perhaps some things not understood and have to be revisited. Just quite normal discussion in the way that people do when they're embarking on finding out information about a new topic or subject. And so what I would say is that whereas the book is a walk and talk, quite a nomadic one, I might say, because it goes on a need-to-know basis and subjects arise as they make their way around a number of interesting locations, some suitable for reflection, some like going to visit the courts that are relevant to the story. On the other hand, this podcast series I see really as food for thought, in that I hope through the podcasts we will have an opportunity of perhaps alluding to or reflecting upon the subjects that are in the chapters individually and in the book generally, and that that might nudge you into making more inquiries about some of those subjects and topics. For example, I've spoken about letter writing, and it so happens that history is full of famous letter writers. Lots of people through time have been known for writing letters. Some did it perhaps more purposefully in part of a living history, if you like, depending on the role they played at the time, either politically or academically, or from a literary point of view, from a cultural point of view, where they were writing in order to advise and inform for posterity. Winston Churchill may have fallen into that category, a great letter writer. So was Queen Victoria. And indeed, the famous Samuel Pepys, who was, I suppose, more renowned for being a diarist. He kept a diary for 10 years through the 1660 period in London, when, of course, it experienced the great disaster of the Fire of London that spread so rapidly. And of course, the buildings in those days were all made of timber, so it spread very quickly, very rapidly. Anecdote has it that Samuel Pepys buried his cheese and his wine, which seemed an interesting way of protecting something quite precious when you were threatened with a fire that was going to engulf your houses and your neighbours' houses, and indeed whole streets, whole areas of the city in which you lived. And then there are people who use letter writing as a means of survival, I suppose, such as people who are in prison. And of course, it's a debate about access to uncensored mail in prison. And people would argue that prisoners' letters should not be in any way censored or read. But necessity sometimes demands that this is done for security reasons. And then there are people who are famous for actions that they've taken in their lives. And I'm thinking here of the prison letters of a very well-known heroine who was known as a rebel and a person who fought for Irish freedom, Countess Markowitz. She married a Polish count and really led a most extraordinary life. She was involved in the 1916 uprising in Ireland, which was the beginning, really, of the road to Ireland finding its way towards independence from the United Kingdom, who had taken over Ireland many, many hundreds of years before. And as a result of her activity, she was spared being shot, but she was imprisoned for a very long time of her life. And from a very privileged background, it was unusual for her to find herself in this dilemma. And a lot of her letters were published that she wrote from prison. She was imprisoned in a prison in Dublin called Mountjoy, in the Cork prison, south of Ireland, and in Holloway prison in London. And you can just imagine from somebody from quite a well-to-do background suffering the difficulties of surviving in a prison in those days in the early 1900s. She wrote to friends, family, and in particular to her sister, Eva Gore-Booth, who retained the letters and responded to all of her letters. To see their relationship between the two sisters and the way they spoke to each other is quite endearing and gives an insight into the great sacrifice that Countess Markowitz made for her strongly held beliefs. She later devoted what remained of her life. She was very ill and frail and weak as a result of her prison experience, but she was always a great supporter for equality in society. And then there was Eleanor Roosevelt, great letter writer. Eleanor Roosevelt was the wife of President Roosevelt of the United States, and in fact the longest serving First Lady in the US. And she was a delegate to the UN General Assembly from 1945 to 1952, and she was in every sense a human rights pioneer. She chaired the committee that approved the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was quite a significant move in those few short years after the end of the Second World War, that nations had come together to put their hands to this commitment to observe these commonly held views and the objective of maintaining human rights as they were first conceived in that Universal Declaration. Talking about prisoners and people who have been imprisoned, in fact, the father of the person who wrote the music to this podcast, Jolyon Jackson, was a composer, a great friend of mine from my university days, who went on to become a very well known and respected musician, played 13 instruments, but also a composer, and wrote scores for both theatre and film, and even television advertising, jingles, television scores for the beginning of the news on Irish radio, I think, at one stage, and even a very well-known and much-remembered jingle for a famous bar of chocolate. I mustn't do more advertising here, but if I say that the bar of chocolate has an unusual triangular shape, it might bring it to mind. His father, indeed, was very interesting. His father was the Assistant Commissioner of Police in Malaya. And in the throes of the war that, of course, ensued throughout the world, the Second World War, he was captured when the Japanese invaded Malaya. In fact, they had what they described then as cycle infantry, and they came down late one evening in December to come in behind from the rear, and no one expected them. And his father was the assistant commissioner, as I've said, was captured and prisoner of war in a Japanese prisoner of war camp, which are known, like most prisoner of war camps, but particularly known for the extreme brutality. He was very loyal to his boss, the commissioner, and was very concerned about his welfare. And in the course of their time there, they were allowed to write only one card. I'm not too sure how often it was, if it was once a year or twice a year. And his wife had fled with her two children. Jolyon wasn't born at that time, but she fled some sort of a little rickety boat and made her way to Australia. It sounds the most extraordinary story. And survived there, went to a post office to look for her husband's pension, which she would have been entitled to. And someone standing beside her heard her, saw her with a small child, boy and girl, and offered to give her some accommodation, where she stayed for a number of years, and then eventually made her way back to Malaya when the word came that some 6.5 years later that the prisoners were going to be released. And she booked into a hotel just opposite the station and brought her suitcase down to stand on the suitcase. Why? So that she could see her husband, Paddy Jackson, coming towards her, because, of course, she had been well advised that they would be in an emaciated state and possibly not recognisable, barely skeletal condition and very unwell. But she stood on her suitcase and saw him in the distance so that she wouldn't register any shock or indeed display her inability to recognise him in the crowd of men who were making their way down the platform. But I was thinking of him in the context of the letter writing, because the cards, they were very small, old-fashioned, smaller than what we would consider a postcard now, very small dimension, white, plain white postcards. And I remember seeing one of these shown to me by Jolyon's mother, with whom I became great friends after he had died. He died very young, 37, of Hodgkin's disease, which he had fought to the bitter end, but it's a form of cancer that seems to take young men and women, mainly men, as its prey. And she showed me one of the cards and how he had tried to overcome the dreaded cruel limit that they were only allowed so many words on the card. And he found a way of putting as much news into the small space, and also devised beautiful small handwriting printed in a way that made it 100% legible, but made it as small as possible. And in order not to waste words in the signing off, he had found a code which meant so much, and he would just sign it off at the end, "Fun tomorrow." I thought that was so poignant at the time, because it was saying, "Looking forward to seeing you," expressing the hope that he would, getting them to think that good days lay ahead, that he would survive and that he would eventually see them, that they would all be reunited and that they would have fun together as a family, which of course later happened. And he came to live in Ireland, down in Lara, near the village of Lara in County Wicklow, where he retired many years later. And they had Jolyon after their reunion, after all those years in the prison camp. And so another wonderful piece of history was born, in that they had a child who was a wonderful musician and composer. So that's certainly food for thought about letter writing. And maybe you might like to do your own piece of research and look for letters, or look for people in history who handed on information through their letters, which would have been more of a personal nature. And also, as I said earlier, those who may have been deliberately writing for posterity, who had a significant role in history and thought it was of value to hand that on to others who would read later. So I hope you enjoy chapter one of the book, and it is called Cultural Exchange, the Pen Friend Project, and the cultural exchange that gives rise to a curiosity about law, which the group eventually take part in trying to fulfill some of that curiosity and find answers to some of the questions.